voice activated. Start recording.
We saw you, Mike, through the window out there in the parking lot with spray paint riding, reserving.
Did you start yours?
No, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually used to. What's that place? The administration building at the University of Florida. Something hall. But I used to pull in there, and there's no parking. Pull into the fire zone. It's a powerful feeling.
Man.
Yeah. Like, pew.
Pull up to the front door.
Chief negotiator. Yeah. Like,
put your cape on.
This guy must be important. Hey, the chief negotiator.
Well, we'll work on that for you.
He's the chief.
Well, anyway, okay, we appreciate this. We went through it. We don't have any questions at this time. We need to take it back and have a conversation with our people.
Well, and we would also be fine with, because you mentioned about wanting the emphasis to be on teaching.
Yeah.
We could certainly see incorporating some of the materials from the emphasis on teaching that you guys put forward, and to defining that as required parameters and enhanced criteria that you wanted to departments to include. So it wouldn't be just a free-for-all enhanced criteria. That it
okay.
Would be.
I got you. Do you have something else for us?
Yeah. So here's our Article 3.
Oh.
Hopefully also very, very simple. Got it?
I tell you, I give it to me. And I...
So as you know, we are currently on that waiver of having run out of that 4-year timeline.
Right.
What we're suggesting, we've gone back and reviewed this, and again, we very, very much appreciate the increase in compensation for the summer funds, and all of the support's working great. Simply striking right now, the way it works now is that a year is counted against you if you receive release time for either or both semesters, right? There's no differentiation between if you get one course release over the academic year or one each semester or the academic year. We're recommending to strike the either or statement from this clause. So it would now read, a faculty member who has been granted release time for both semesters during 4 consecutive academic years will not again be eligible for release time until 2 academic years have passed, right? So if you only receive one, we're proposing if you only receive one course release over an academic year, it doesn't count against you for a year of service. And that would square everything. For us going forward, we wouldn't need any more exceptions or anything like that, any more waivers going forward.
Okay. All right. I don't think we have any questions about this. We are agreeable to the proposal you made to change what you said was a typographical error.
Okay.
To make that 0.5 instead of
0.5%.
So we strike the percentage, is that what we did?
Yes, yeah, because it says a multiply of 0.5.
Yeah, we're good with that. We can do that.
Okay. I don't have the...
That's okay, we can do it next time.
Okay.
You know, that sort of, so we sort of have taken care of two articles today.
I know.
That article and the one we didn't know.
Well, and if you want to sign this one, if you want to sign this one too, we can just keep on. Great. Thank you. That's good. Yeah. Our emphasis too was trying to focus on knowing we can focus on this instructor lecture stuff. I can give you a few additional. I'll ask you guys. Did you have any additional thoughts on phased retirement or the non-discrimination article?
No, we're still working on those.
Okay. A little bit of context. I looked to see how many grievances that UFF has filed under the non-discrimination language. Since Ramey Gajon has been our grievance officer in the last couple of years, we haven't filed a single grievance under that term. Now, there might have been ones that have been filed beyond us, right, by non-members or other things, but that's not, we're running a pretty tight ship on those things. Now, Mike, I mean, we've looked into this a little bit too. But there's currently the waiver language in there about UFF holding off on going forward with arbitration and stuff. You know, we could certainly look at striking the waiver language. I mean, if that, I'm almost like moving very quickly to arbitration, if that is something that the university would be responsive to. I mean, we're resistant to undermining potentially due process for faculty.
Yeah, yeah. And that's it. Article 6 is still a work in progress, so I really don't know what the emphasis will be on or what language changes are being contemplated.
Okay.
I do know one thing. One thing that always strikes me about Article 6, it has created some problems.
That we're in agreement with. Yeah.
Is that, you know, I understand that there's a provision, which is a provision that's very common, both in statute and in our collective bargaining agreements, which is an election of remedies piece. And so what it says is basically, if you have an issue, you can bring an issue in any form, but you can't bring them in multiple forms. So you can't bring the same thing to issue in a grievance arbitration and at the same time in a court of law, for example. I get that. Everybody gets that. You don't want, for a lot of reasons, good reasons, the effort, the possibility of
contradictory
results, the fact that, you know, somebody goes through the process once and then, well, people who are witnesses and participants, they don't want to go through two full-scale things. But then it says something in the contract about the exception being filing an EEOC complaint. Well, okay. And that goes back to legacy, though. So it goes back to the Blue Book, so it goes back to Regents. I don't know who anybody was thinking about back then. But why would that be different than anything else, kind of? You know, if you think something happened, an employment action was taken that you think is discriminatory, and you use Article 6 and challenge it in arbitration and say, this is discrimination, I'm going to put on my case. Why would you also go to the EEOC? Why is that the exception? I have a hard time dealing with that. Now, the problem, then it gets kind of even more complicated, because if the EEOC gives you a notice of right to sue, which they do in every case, even if they don't like your case, they still give you a notice of right to sue. Then you have 90 days to initiate a state or federal court action. Well, traditionally that has been held to block the arbitration. So, it's like, why haven't this person run off into this agency, have these two fronts open, but this can't go, they both can't go. You know, one of them is gonna get stopped at some point. And I don't know where that language comes from, but that's always been I keep reading that and saying, I don't see how these can be read logically together.
Yeah, now it's, so if you file a grievance, the waiver says, you know, we agree to hold that grievance as HR conducts an investigation.
Right. Right.
Then it can go forward with the grievance after that, but then you're right, there is the clause that says this is not binding on an EEOC complaint. Now, we have to look into that as well. I don't know if there's federal law governing.
And
and I think there's timelines associated. I think Tom mentioned this to me not long ago, is that there's filing deadlines for the EEOC that would make filing an EEOC complaint impossible if you had to wait for the completion of a.
I would agree. But see, the thing about it is this. If you're going to pursue it through arbitration and not through court, you don't need to beat that final deadline. If your intent is to go to court, then you have to beat that filing deadline. But then you're stopped from going to arbitration. So I mean, I guess it allows people more time to make that choice. But It still doesn't seem. Now, I'll say.
It takes time to determine if you're kin as well.
That's
too,
true,
right?
You can. Now, I will say this. You know, it used to be that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission would find cause or no cause in a case, and they don't do that anymore. So they really just say. They say something like, without finding cause or no cause, we're concluding our investigation with no finding.
Well, Mike, as legacy language, what have other universities done to address this issue?
I think what they do is they kind of, this is weird sort of interplay game where these people, I can tell you this, there's one that, you know the arbitrator, Pat Ranovich? Have you ever used Pat Ranovich? Have we ever used him? Mm-hmm. Well, Pat Ranovich just had this come up where a faculty member who was denied tenure and promotion filed a discrimination complaint, and he also filed with the EEOC FCHR. And everything was going along, you know. Arbitration was accepted. Pat Ranovich was selected. The date for the hearing was selected. Then the faculty member, who I don't know if the faculty member is represented by the UFF or not. They're not. He's not, because the. But he's not. So. FSU found out about the complaint being filed in circuit court in Tallahassee, sent the complaint to Pat Ranovich. Pat Ranovich said, well, I just got
arbitration.
I just lost my jurisdiction over this case. And I'm returning everybody's money. And have a good life. So it's this weird thing that's going on there. You know, like, I guess, well, you could probably sit on your law, you can't do that either. You have to proceed in arbitration. You have a deadline.
Well, I guess, Mike, I was asking if it's language, legacy language. What have other universities done to address this in their collective bargaining agreement?
I don't think they have, but I think they struggle with it. It's like all this. It's like this weird thing, this timing thing. Like, why go to all the trouble of going through the arbitration step, selecting an arbitrator, selecting a date, then filing a lawsuit and having the arbitrator say, well, I'm done.
Well, yeah, and I went through the other CBAs, looked to see if there's anything different. And you know, our language is a little different than the others. But
it is.
But I think it's just more specific rather than a different process. I think it's the same process, but it's just, you know,
it's
just articulated more fully.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's this sort of stay of the grievance process in a discrimination action here, and I don't think there's necessarily a stay in some other universities. So they have Office of Diversity doing an investigation while there's grievance meetings going on.
Yeah.
At most universities.
Yeah.
Which is. I don't know.
Does it seem like we have a better solution than they do? Or not?
I don't know your track record. I'm not familiar with what's been, you know, the timelines for investigations and whether they've been, you know, whether they're over, running over them
they are.
Each other.
They are, so I don't know that ours is better right now. We just hired another investigator, so that may help the process a little bit, but it has been, I mean, we've had to contract out for investigators. So.
And see, I would say this. I've always said this too, which also is kind of, you know, in arbitration, what you can get as a remedy is limited.
Yeah.
You can get back pay.
Or reevaluated.
Or reconsidered. It's limited. But even because obviously there's no, you can't get money for damages other than make whole. Where if you believed you were discriminated against and you went into state court, federal court, under the state law, federal law, you can get emotional distress, you can get front pay, you can say, I don't ever want to go back there again, they discriminate against me, and I want 10 years of pay because they ruined my life, or whatever. And so if I was, I'm not giving the United Faculty of Florida legal advice, probably get sued for malpractice if I do, but I would say, I don't want to touch those cases, because I don't want to go to arbitration and have then somebody say, all right, I won or I lost at arbitration. But now I'm being told I can't have emotional distress. Now I'm being told I can't have front pay. Now I'm being told I can't have the attorney of my choice and the fees and costs associated with that in federal court. You know, I'll tell you a little story. When I was a first year associate, we don't represent plaintiffs. When I was a first year associate, pouring rain, this guy came in, and they sent him back to me because he was a plaintiff, and my job was to tell plaintiffs that we don't represent plaintiffs. So he came back and he told the story. He said that he worked for. He worked for Western Union, and which is owned by Chiquita Banana, and that I think that was who represented them, but they said, we're offering you an early out program, and he said, I don't want it, because my wife and 2 daughters just opened a bridal shop, and I need the medical insurance, I need all the background stuff. So they said, apparently, he says, if you don't take it, we'll just fire you. So he said, no, I don't want it. He had some low-level job or something. So they did an inspection like 6 weeks later, found that the work area was dirty, and they fired him. So he said, that's my story. I just want my early outback. Can you get me the whatever they were offering, 3 months' pay or something? So I say this, my partner say, you know, why don't we take that guy's case? We could just write a letter. They'll give him 6 weeks back or 3 months back, you know? That's what they both want. So I wrote him a letter, and this big law firm took me to lunch downtown Miami. It's like 4 lawyers. National law firm. We're very, trying to intimidate them. Like a young Paul Newman would play my part if I was.
Wow, getting interesting.
Yeah. Our batteries are running a little low.
Yeah. Let me take you over.
No. Remember when I played that in a movie? He had a drinking problem. I didn't throw that in. So I could go and become, I go to Park. But they wrote me, you know, this guy, we have all this dirt on this guy. You don't know what you're getting into. So the partners that I leave behind say, okay, we got this guy that you signed up, and they won't give him this, now we're stuck with this guy. We have to take this to trial. So they take it to trial. And he was probably my age now. So they go off, the jury deliberates, comes back with a note to the judge that says, what is the most we can give this person? Yeah. They gave him millions of dollars.
Wow.
Front pay. They said this guy should never have to go back to work there again for the rest of his life. So we're giving him a salary till his normal retirement age, which we say is 10 years from now. So.
And so you personally got the cut from that?
I did not get a dime.
You didn't get the, cut?
No, I didn't get a dime.
Partners
got it. You should get like 40% for signing him up, right?
No. Although they did tell me a funny story is after they won, they walked him out to the parking lot of the federal courthouse in Miami, and he had this old beat up car, and he was getting into it, and he goes, what am I doing? I don't need to drive this anymore. And he goes, God.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
That's great.
Tim is the.
But anyway, that's what I'm saying. See, like he would.
That's what we could tell him.
If he was in arbitration, he would have gotten 3 months pay.
So is Kim? You said a second ago about that you're having to hire outside people to evaluate these things. Is the primary problem you're facing like infrastructure, like to deal with the number of complaints? Is that the?
It was partially that, and then also we had to work with our team a little bit more in terms of, because you know, with people's schedules, it was like, well, I want to file a complaint, but then I want you to chase me around and find me.
Okay.
You know, and so it was things like that we had to kind of streamline that. So I feel like we're in a better place now, but it was also just that we were shorthanded in the number of people who could do the investigations. So and then also the reporting, they're very stringent guidelines you have to follow in terms of doing that, and so making sure that we had people who were up to speed with that, because we spent a lot of time with making sure they were in the appropriate format.
Sure.
So.
And Kim, am I correct that these would not necessarily all be faculty? Because if you're
correct,
okay.
There was a Anita had worked with a group that she did training with, and so we had a few people, some of them were staff.
Do staff follow this? Do they have like access to grievance and HR, or are they essentially HR? I mean, they're not. Are they? Because they're covered by the. I don't know the staff.
Right. But no, staff can. We do staff or faculty.
Or students.
And students.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So when you put all those together.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where we. Most of our student complaints probably fall under Title IX, so we probably have the least amount coming from students. But yeah, it was just a combination. We had to get additional hands. So we have an excellent person on board now.
Okay. All right, we'll stop the tape.